What's up and welcome to the Active Amputee Podcast. Everything people with a limb difference need to live an active and exciting lifestyle. I'm Bjorn Eser, the founder of and shaker and maker behind the Active Amputee. And you're listening to episode number 47. The guest in today's episode is Chris Rains from the US. During this episode, we chat about sports as a key part in his rehabilitation process. We talk about mentorship and we talk about the Range of Motion project and their fundraising for Mobility is Not a Luxury. Today with us is Chris Rains from South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. It's a real pleasure seeing you here, Chris. We only met recently, an introduction through Click Medical. Welcome on the show, Chris. It's nice having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate it. It's going to be a good pod.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that chat. Chris, you're like me, you're an above knee amputee. And can you tell us, how did it come that you, a couple of years ago, suddenly had to embark on a new track in life?
Yeah. So I worked for a small metal company out of Greenville, South Carolina. And so what I did is I delivered metal pipe and such to contractors. And on April 8th, 2015, I had a bad day on the job. Long story short, the truck that I was driving had a tangle with a 18-wheeler or semi-truck. And yeah, so the cab of the truck that I was driving and the dashboard and everything came in on top of my legs. So I was not able to see my legs at all. I knew I was injured, but I didn't know the extent. I think I had some adrenaline running to kind of offset the pain. Because yes, it hurt, but it didn't hurt as bad as you would think.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, is paramedics and fire department got there and everything. And they had to cut both doors off, spread the cab. And immediately they saw that they needed a tourniquet, and thankfully they already had that on hand. They're prepared just in case. So they hurried up and put that on. And I jokingly like to tell people that there's a requirement to have at least one dumb fireman on scene, because this guy, he said, whatever you do, don't look down, right? So of course I looked down, and for whatever reason, I didn't panic. They did a really good job at keeping my mind off the situation, the team that was working to help rescue me, and except for that one fireman, maybe. But anyways, so they got me to the hospital, and I knew something else was going on with my other leg, and it just could feel pain there. But yeah, got me to the hospital, and a doctor, I remember him looking down from above, and he told me that they're going to have to amputate my leg.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's a hard thing to hear, for sure. And so I asked him to please save it if he could. He didn't say anything back, but I could see it in his eyes. I knew right then and there that that's all I needed to see, that to know that my leg was about to be amputated, right? And don't remember much after that. Knocked me out, of course, medication and... But yeah, referring to my other leg, I actually ended up ball pushed through the socket on my hip. So I've got plates and screws over there, and the kneecap was all the way over. And yeah, so I have foot drop on the other leg from all that. And I wear a TurboMed AFO brace that's outside of the shoe for foot drop. That's what happened that day.
That's what happened about 9 years ago. If you look back now, and as you said, completely unexpected as compared to many others. I mean, for me, it was a planned amputation. I could, you know, get in the right headspace, get the timing right, everything, prepare for it. And obviously, was never comparing my amputation afterwards with a fully functioning leg before, because I already had, you know, pain and non-functioning leg for more than a decade. If you look back now, and, you know, almost a decade, the different phases of the recovery, if you look at the initial weeks and months, what would you say were the main challenges? What were the things when you had the feeling, oh, now I really reached another milestone where I know an important step has happened? If you look back, what were some of the main challenges and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, challenges. I had several of those at first. So when I got hurt, I had my hospital stay. I had a lot of people come around, friends, family, all of that. So I had this mental high because I had so many people around that honestly, like, didn't feel like I had time to think about it. And then when they weren't around, I was out due to the medication. So that was going on in the hospital. And then I got home and it was completely different. Not as many people were coming around to visit. It was a real letdown, you know, just a roller coaster ride of mental, you know, thoughts. And so I guess that would be my first real challenge, was just getting home and not having those people around like I did. And then realizing, okay, like, I'm going to have to learn some new ways of life. And but I will backtrack a little bit. Before I got home, I went through physical therapy inpatient, but I had not got my prosthetic yet. Just due to the fact that my other leg was injured, I had to have it out straight for some months. And so, of course, as you, I'm not sure if you've done physical therapy or not, but there's definitely some challenges that come with that. So,
yeah.
So, those are definitely some challenges. And then another challenge that I had, which actually led into me working out and everything like that, which we'll get into in a bit. But because I had to have my leg out straight in a wheelchair for some months, and then my diet was bad, I actually gained a good bit of weight pretty quick. And so that led into a bad headspace mentally, you know, had some mental challenges with that. Just the whole thing, really, everything going on at that time.
Did you have, in the initial time when the initial shock from the accident is over, the amputation took place, you've slowly have to get into, well, this is my new reality, if I want it or not. Did you had professionals like mentors or peer counselors to guide you, to be with you, to support you in the initial time? Or was it basically, well, here's a doctor and here's a physiotherapist and now all the rest is your responsibility?
That is a great question. So when I was doing inpatient physical therapy, they sent a lady by my room. I think she was a psychiatrist and she was there to talk mental health. Strangely, I wasn't doing so bad mentally then. And so we ended up talking about photography or something like that. And yeah. And so we didn't really even touch it, that topic of mental health. And so it really wasn't until I got home that I was like, okay, like, this kind of sucks, you know, at least at first. And that was the time that I needed to talk to somebody, you know, in that position. However, I don't think I was willing to reach out. I was kind of quiet about it. And so I just kind of dealt with it on my own. Probably not the most healthy way of doing it. And, you know, if I look back, I probably would have reached out, you know, if I could take that back. But it is what it is. So.
Yeah. And very often, I mean, in these initial, when so many things are on your mind, I must admit, I didn't even know there was something like peer counseling networks or peer support mentoring networks. I only heard about it when I started doing this podcast a couple of years ago. That was 10 years after my amputation. And I think here in Germany, I think it's not as well established as in many other countries, especially in the US or the UK. I think it's only now taking off a bit, and mainly, I think, driven by people who think, oh, it would have been great way back when I had an amputation if there would have been something like that. So I know a few other amputees who basically took it upon themselves to avail themselves to clinics and to orthopedic surgeons and others. There's still a lot of, I would say, a lot of room for improvement, at least here in Germany.
I was just thinking, you know, it's needed worldwide because we're all human, right? And we all, you know, us that have had the amputation are going to deal with those challenges. So no matter what region of the world you're in, it's still needed.
So true. Yeah. Chris, if I'm not mistaken, later on, didn't you get trained as a peer counselor, mentor?
That's close to right. So after I started doing better mentally, I'll kind of lead into it. So the reason I started doing somewhat better mentally was because after I had a real low with weight gain and everything like that, I knew I needed something to change my mindset. And so I joined a gym, a YMCA. Yeah, working out sucked at first, but I was like, okay, like, I need to do this. Let me be dedicated to something. I have the time. And so eventually I got addicted to it. And so I'm a gym, what they jokingly call a gym rat. And so I pretty much go every day at this point. But
Cool.
Yeah, just, you know, I felt like I was looking better. Exercise is just good for you mentally overall. And then, you know, I started meeting people. And so, yeah, I ended up, I'm not certified through the Amputee Coalition. However, the local physical therapy hospital that I went to, it's called Rogers CPS, they have their own way of being certified. And so I went through their process and I've gone to see their people that they have there doing physical therapy inpatient peer visiting in that capacity. So
yeah.
Then I ended up becoming friends with those people and hanging out with them outside of, you know, that. And so it's been really neat.
Ah, that's cool. Yeah, that's great. If you look at this, yeah, this the support you offer to others, kind of in your private capacity, where you say, you know, I had to go through that. I learned my lessons. I partly was by myself, and looking back, it would have been nice having someone by my side, backing me up, being there for questions. Mm-hmm. And someone who's probably not a medical professional, where you always think, oh, yeah, that's my surgeon. I actually want to ask some other questions. So I just want to whinge in an outside my family. I just need to let off steam or something. If you look at that, yeah, these encounters, what do you think is the most important aspect a peer counselor needs to have? And where can people find peer counselors or mentors or support networks if they are in a position and have the feeling they need someone to reach out to?
Yeah. So I think some important things to have as a like peer visitor, peer counselor, just be willing to listen and then help guide from your personal experience. What worked for you, what did not work for you, those type things. But also be vulnerable and say, this worked for me, but it may not work for you, right? Don't say this is the way to do it, because it may not be the way to do it for them, right? And so just being willing to listen. If you know of a good prosthetist that's done you well, but has also done other people well in the area, throw that out there. Go ask insurance advice, because this is all new to them. And I mean, it's a lot at first. How to use the bathroom. How do you shower? All of that, right? And so, yeah, it's I get all kind of questions. Going to your second question, how do people like find a peer visitor? Again, I can only speak from personal experience, but so what happens and how I get connected to the people at Rogers CPS to go peer visit is, first of all, either a physical therapist or occupational therapist will, you know, while they're in the patient's room, will say, hey, you know, are you interested in speaking to someone that's been through similar circumstances? And, you know, that's up to them, of course. And so if they say yes, they may mention a few things about me or whatever, because I've given them permission to do so.
Yeah.
And they'll reach out to me and say, I have this patient that's in this, you know, particular room. Would you be willing to go by and talk? And that's literally how it starts for me.
Yeah.
And go by and have some conversation. And like I said, oftentimes it ended in friendship. So
That's nice to hear. And it's also, let's say, call out to our audience. If you have the feeling, or if you have friends where you have the feeling, oh, it would be good for them to have someone to talk to, someone who is in a similar situation or has been through similar things, really reach out to your physiotherapist, reach out to your prosthetist, reach out through the Amputee Coalition or other networks in your country, and just ask if there's a service like this. And if you then find a person where you also have the feeling that the chemistry is right, where you connect, where you have the feeling you can be asking all kinds of questions without being ashamed or thinking they're stupid or taboo questions or something. And I think it's really important that people don't think they are by themselves. They have to deal with everything themselves. So a call out here, reach out if you have the feeling it does you any good. Or if you have someone among your friends where you have the feeling, oh, let me give them a little tip. There is a service like that.
Yeah, most definitely. And all those professions that you mentioned, generally speaking, they have some sort of connection. And if not, they may be willing to help you find that connection, you know?
You mentioned working out early. You said, I was a bad headspace, and physically I had the feeling I was gaining, not just feeling, I was gaining weight, and I had the feeling it's not good for me. And then you signed up in a gym, and then you became a gym rat. And if I look at your social media account, just through the last year or two, it's not just the gym. I've seen you surfing, climbing, hiking in a tricycle, hand-powered tricycle, I think I saw you. So a very active lifestyle. Part of your recovery, yes. Part of an adventure, I guess so too. If you look back, what was the most challenging, demanding new physical activity where you thought, okay, I've done the gym now, what's next? What is it I want to try? And yeah, how did you go about it?
Yeah, it just kind of all came together. So it was strictly at first working out in the gym. Let me backtrack just a little bit. So previous to being injured, I was quite lazy, to be honest. Wasn't doing much physical activity. And so just in general, I got into the gym. That was the only thing I was doing. Like I said, I was kind of lazy beforehand, but it kind of got me in the headspace of being physically active just in general. And then I found out that Roger C. Peace, the physical therapy hospital I mentioned, has a pretty good for the area adaptive sports program. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, hey, do you want to go out hand cycling? You know, we have these hand cycles. We meet on this trail called the Swamp Rabbit Trail. And then it was like, oh, and then we also have sled hockey pickup games. Cool. You want to do that? Cool. Like, okay, like I'm getting active. Yeah, I'm enjoying this. And I'm meeting people within the community. Yeah. With a variety of injuries or disabilities. And so that was really neat. And then I just started kind of networking, just meeting people through different foundations and finding out about these other opportunities. And yeah, so like you mentioned, I've done surfing and rock climbing, and I've traveled out to do that stuff. I think you asked kind of like one of the harder sports or whatever that I've tried. One that's kind of frightening at first was definitely rock climbing.
Yeah.
Definitely out of my wheelhouse, but...
Yeah. Did you try indoor climbing or did you go outdoor right away?
I think I did just a little brief session of indoor with a kind of local adaptive sports program called Catalyst Sports. And so I did that knowing I was going to be actually going out to Aspen, Colorado with the Kirsty Innes Foundation. And so Kirsty's a good friend of mine. And so I was part of APT Rock Climbing Clinic through the foundation in 2021. And so it was really neat. Got to go out. All the equipment you actually get to keep, which is pretty incredible, including the little baby rock climbing foot made specifically for rock climbing. It's in a little rock climbing shoe.
Yeah.
And, heights aren't my favorite. Got over the years. But yeah, I'd say that was probably one of the more challenging ones. Not to mention it takes some finger strength. But yeah, we did that outside in Aspen, Colorado. So.
That sounds great. And what you mentioned is quite impressive, the chance to actually have access to groups which have adaptive equipment. I think that's probably, at least if I look back at my 15 years of being an amputee, as I said, I think I had an amputation which went really well. So 3 months after the amputation, I was basically really fit, could run my, you know, my normal life, could go back to my job full time, and was quite interested in doing outdoor sports or adventure sports again. But I had no clue on how to connect to any charities, any organizations which actually have adaptive equipment in terms of rock climbing equipment, kayaking, skiing, hand cycles, nothing like that. So it was always either improvising or saying, too expensive to invest in my own stuff, especially not if I don't know if I actually like it. You know, I think it's different if you try something, get really hooked and think, oh yeah, I'm willing to fork out a couple thousand for a good hand bike. But if you're not really sure if that's your thing, it's probably something which at least is beyond my pay grade. But learning about Kirsty Ennis Foundation with now her snowboarding clinic and her rock climbing clinic and then having the, I guess, the Evolve adaptive foot or something, actually afterwards keeping it, that is great.
Mm-hmm. Pretty incredible.
Quite amazing. Yeah, talking about activity being mobile, I know you have been involved with the ROMP. And one of ROMP's mottos, the mobility is not a luxury, advocating for mobility being a human right. You've been in their recent elite climbing team summiting. Was it Cotopaxi or did you have to change because of volcanic?
It was Cotopaxi. And that was in October of 2021. I was on that team. It was interesting. because they did a split team, and generally they would just take one large group up. But yeah, it was definitely the opportunity of a lifetime. I was super thankful I got asked to do it. And so I unfortunately did not make it to the summit. I made it to around 16,000 feet. So there's a refuge there. And where I live is definitely not up that high. And so even though we try to acclimate, my body was not ready for it. Did okay on the acclimation climbs. Got up there, hour and a half in, bad headache, and went to go lay down. I've tried to put this nicely 3 hours in, had to find a trash can. And that was a rush to get my leg on for sure. Was not ready for that. But so unfortunately, and kind of fortunately, I felt better by the time they went to go climb again, because they climbed the glacier part at night. I believe because it's colder, and so it kind of refreezes, and it's just safer. I actually felt good by the time they go to do that. However, the climbing guides knew that I was sick earlier, and they're like, yeah, you're not going up. And so I just stayed back at the refuge and waited on them, because they were afraid that if I was to go up, it would reactivate the symptoms and could potentially be worse. And so I understand, but yeah, that was kind of frustrating. But you know, I'm super thankful to be there. The people that I met, we raised, I forget the exact amount of money we raised as a whole group, but it was a pretty good amount. It was definitely over $100,000 as a whole group. And that was incredible to be able to raise that amount of money for APTs in Ecuador and Guatemala. So super thankful that I was part of that.
Just following it for the last couple of years, and probably to bring the audience on board, the ones who haven't heard about ROMP and the ones who haven't heard about the Cotopaxi Elite Climbing Team and the fundraising efforts. I mean, ROMP, the Range of Motion Project, advocates for mobility is not a luxury and has a clinic in Guatemala, and I think also now servicing people in neighboring countries with prosthetic devices, services, physiotherapy, and not one-off dropping shipments and saying, well, this is what you get. And once this is through, you're by yourself again. No, actually having an ongoing support service there, which I think is really great. And every year with some climbers like you and Kirsten and others, they tackle Cotopaxi, which is roughly 20,000 feet. And for the European listeners, that's 6,500 meters or something around, something in that range. And it is a demanding climb. And it is to raise awareness, to raise money, and to bring people together and have a really good time. And yes, one goal is to reach the summit, but it's also to reach your own summit. And if your own summit is 15,000 feet or 12,000 feet, or having a good time with the others and pushing your own personal boundary a bit further, that is also part of the experience. And I think it's always amazing just seeing these teams excelling, growing, pushing the limits, and at the same time doing something really, really, really valuable.
That was a great explanation for sure. So
I can only strongly recommend people to, on the one hand, check the pictures on your social media account, and on the other hand, also check out ROMP if they haven't done it before. I mean, committing to such an adventure, no matter if in the end you made it to the top on it, but, you know, being asked if you want to be part of this year's team or last year's team, and then making the commitment saying, yes, physically, I think I can get there. Mentally, I think I can get there. But also in terms of, I'm not sure, not many of us put our prosthetic devices and everything that's connected to it through these conditions. And if they fail up there, you're stuffed. So how did you prepare for something like that after you made the commitment?
I'd done some small fundraising events for ROMP, and so they were a little bit familiar with me, right? But I literally got this message saying, hey, would you like to go to Ecuador and climb this volcano with us to raise awareness and also raise donation money? I was like, okay, well, I don't get this message every day, so sure, you know, I didn't even really think about it. And then I was like, oh, what did I dedicate myself to? I don't climb. And so what I did, I actually reached out to Kirsty and bought what's called side sticks, which are basically nice forearm crutches. And she uses them all over the world, climbs Everest and Denali with them. I'm like, okay, if they're good enough for her, they're probably good enough for me, you know? And so I got those, and then I started going to North Carolina some and hiking, which can somewhat prepare me for, you know, terrain. However, there's really nothing around here that could prepare me for altitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I trained as much as I could around here, but, you know, can only do so much for altitude.
Was there anything when you thought about your pathetic setup, the prosthesis, the foot, I'm not sure if you're wearing a line or anything, where you thought, how do I actually make sure it's up to the job, to temperature, to whatever? I mean, you depend on that stuff.
Yeah.
When something breaks on a nice summer day, you just drop your pens and fiddle around until it's fixed. But if it's minus 20 degrees in the night on a glacier, things look slightly different.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, so I guess number one, make sure the leg is fully charged, the microprocessor knee. That's step one. Funny quick side note on that. I had misplaced my charger for a little bit. However, on my team, there's a girl named Lacey Henderson. She's a United States Paralympian, and she does long jump. Sitting next to her on a bus, realizing I had misplaced my charger and that I'm really going to need it in a few days, and I'm looking at her prosthetic, her everyday, you know, use prosthetic, and said, hey, Lacey, I noticed we have the same leg. You mind if I borrow your charger? So, yeah, she's the reason that I made it through. But one thing that I had to think about for me with the foot drop, I reached out to TurboMed and asked if they could potentially donate some extra AFO braces. You know, I told them what I was doing and everything, and they agreed to it. But I'm thinking, okay, heavier boots, harder terrain, more chances of breaking an AFO brace. And so, yeah, so that all worked out just fine. Thankfully, with the side sticks, you know, at least I was somewhat able to offload pressure on the prosthetics. But you're right, the heavier boots and everything. I made sure I got a good checkup on my prosthesis before heading to Ecuador. Thinking back, I think that's pretty much the run through on getting set up with the equipment. So.
Chris, I know you've been involved or benefited from involvement with various charities which offer special activities. Is there for the audience any charity or support organization you want to recommend so that also other people get to know what's actually out there and where people can actually try out new things? Any organization or two or three you would like the audience to know about?
Yeah, for sure. So just an easy one to recommend that comes to the top of my head is the Challenge Athletes Foundation. They're based out of the San Diego area. They do some traveling events for amputees and those with disabilities. However, a lot of it's West Coast based. But one thing that they do is if you find that you really enjoy a sport, and I can only speak for the United States. I don't know. Past the United States, but say you really enjoy sports, so like I enjoyed hand cycling, they have a grant application and they open it once a year during the fall time frame, and so you can apply for adaptive equipment. And so they actually bought me with a grant a hand cycle.
Ooh, nice.
Super thankful for that.
Yeah, great.
And so yeah, they provide, like I say, both equipment and opportunities to do adaptive sport.
Yeah. Let me probably add on the Challenge Athletes Foundation, because I also was funded by them 4 or 5 years ago. I know they changed the rules a bit. So if people want to apply, just check when the next funding round is open, which normally I think opens in October or somewhere around there, late September,
right.
October.
Definitely fall time. Right?
Yeah. I think the deadline was always beginning of December, first week of December or something. They used to have three different funding pots, so to speak. And as you said, one was for adaptive equipment, which I think is only for the US and Canada. It also used to be for Europe, I think. But I think now they like to pay the supplier right away. And I think it's much more difficult with overseas deliveries. But they also have grants for, let's say you're into climbing or kayaking and you need a tutor who can teach someone with a disability and you just need, let's say, money for, you know, a kayaking course or something, which I think they still fund worldwide. And I think if you're into sports and you want to take part in the world championship, but you're lacking the travel money and or you couldn't go if you don't have support, I think they also have a pot for supporting people who need travel money to go to high-level sports events as participants. So it's really worth checking them out. And I think actually the chances of getting funding are quite high. I know so many people who got smaller grants, and I think they really try to spread out the money not just to a dozen or two dozen people, but to hundreds every year, which I think is great. Yeah. So the Challenge Athletes Foundation, any other organization which comes to your mind where you say, ooh, they are really, people should check them out?
Again, I've been very fortunate and I've gotten to do a lot of really neat things with different foundations. So if anybody out there is familiar with Bethany Hamilton, so they made the Soul Surfer movie about her. She got her arm bit off by a shark in Kauai, Hawaii when she was a teenager, and she still lives there. You know, she became a professional surfer even after the fact. Well, her foundation, the Beautifully Flawed Foundation, does retreats once a year. Generally speaking, that's in Del Mar, California, for young men and women. They separate time frames one after another, though. And so I'm pretty sure the ladies is called the Beautifully Flawed Retreats. And then the guys, they've named the Forge. And so I've actually been part of that for the last 3 years now.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Well, 3 years in a row. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good. So two great recommendations, the Challenge Athletes Foundation and Bethany Hamilton's Beautifully Flawed Foundation. Great. I think that's good, especially for people who are US-based or maybe Canada-based. That's great. Thank you very much, Chris. That's really nice. We're slowly coming to an end. We're already 40 minutes into the show, and I try to keep it at roughly half an hour. If people want to learn more about you, want to see what you're doing, want to learn more about what you're up to, where can they find information about you and where can they learn more about you?
I guess the easiest way to find me would be Instagram, and it's Chris and then Rains, R-A-I-N-S, one, and then leg. So funny thing, before I got injured, it was just Chris Rains, one, because that was what I could claim, right? Now I'm down to one leg, so I just added the leg part after. So here we go. Worked out well.
Yeah.
Like I planned it.
Did you? No. Good. I also going to put the Instagram link into the show notes. So if people want to check it out, and as I said, beautiful pictures from you doing all kinds of different things. And I think it's really worth checking that out. Chris, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you. And I hope we have the pleasure to keep on talking another time, or maybe meet sometime somewhere. But for today, let me thank you. And we talk soon.
That's great.
Bye, Chris.
Take care. Have a good one.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the new episodes. And I would really appreciate it if you leave me a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to learn more about The Active Amputee, make sure to head over to www.theactiveamputee.org, where you find hundreds of articles from amputees for amputees. Articles filled with inspiration, information, and encouragement to be active and live a rewarding life. I see you all again for the next episode. Until then, all the best. This is Bjorn from The Active Amputee.